everybody's all jealous and shit, because I'm like the lead singer of the band, dude. And I think everybody's got a fucking problem with me, dude. And they need to take it up with me after the show. Because these chicks don't even know the name of my band. But they're all on me like they want to hold hands. Because once I blow, they know that I'll be the man. All because I'm the lead singer of my band. So I get off stage, right? Drop the mic.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the 19th Hole Golf Show. I'm Ryan Ballingy. Get a hold of me on Twitter at Ryan Ballingy, or you can find Golf News Net on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Snapchat at Golf News Net. We are presented by BetDSI.com, and we use BetDSI.com's weekly odds in our posts for the European Tour, the PGA Tour, and sometimes, including this week, the LPGA Tour and the Web.com Tour. And we use them because they can tell you how the money is moving in real time, percentages based on players, and seeing how the odds move. So whether you are on this side of the country, or this side of the Atlantic in the United States, and that's not really an option for you to do sports betting, it's still great for fantasy golf research. And if you're elsewhere in the world where that is legal, check out BetDSI.com. So on this week's show, we've got a couple of different things we want to tackle. First of all, we've taken a little time off. We didn't do a show last week. We've kind of been every other week the last couple of weeks. It's kind of the end of the year. People care a little bit less about golf. There's a lot of things going on. So we want to try and pack in a couple of things into this show topically, and one of those is an assessment of where the U.S. Ryder Cup team is, and then we want to talk a little bit about Golfsmith choosing to file for bankruptcy. That'll be very brief. And then we have a guest this week, and his name is Gary Cohen, and Gary Cohen is the CEO of a company called Easy Links. And you may have heard of Easy Links if you're in the golf industry. If not, you've probably used their technology in some way. You might not know it. Easy Links provides booking engines and a host of other technology services for golf course owners and operators. And they also have teamed up with the PGA Tour last year to bring a service called TeeOff.com, which had been out there previously, but now has the backing financially and in terms of marketing power of the PGA Tour, which is a competitor of GolfNow, and arguably they have a larger tee sheet available to them. So I wanted to talk about the company's growth a little bit with Gary, and then in an interview we recorded, also wanted to talk a little bit about how golf evolves, how golf participation evolves, and dig in very, very little bit into Golfsmith's bankruptcy filing and what that ultimately tells us about the sport and what it doesn't tell us about where the sport is. So we'll come back to that on the second half of the program. First, let's talk a little bit about our U.S. Ryder Cup team. And I say our, because I know that there's no rooting in the press box, but the predominant number of you who listen to this show are American, and the reality is that in most things patriotic, most things country-based or continent-based for the European friends, it just kind of works out that you wind up saying we eventually. So might as well get it out of the way and say we. So we've got 8 qualifiers, automatic qualifiers. We talked about that in our last podcast. Now we've got 3 additions with 1 to come. So Davis Love III on Monday announced he would add guys who finished 10th, 11th, and 12th in the point standings, J.B. Holmes, Ricky Fowler, and Matt Kuchar, and they've been added to the team. And he looked over number 9, Bubba Watson, which I think surprised a lot of people in some sense, because typically when we think about these team competitions, one of the captain's picks tends to go to the person who just missed. It's almost kind of a courtesy, like, hey, you got so close, we're going to let you play. But that didn't happen in 2014 for the American side. Tom Watson left off guys 10, 11, and 12. That the top 9 players qualified for that team. Watson left off 10, 11, and 12 with his captain's picks. And went something like 13, 15, 25 to add Keegan Bradley, Webb Simpson, and Hunter Mahan. Now, obviously, the U.S. got their asses handed to them. But there is a little bit of precedent breaking there to not have the guy that just finished outside of an automatic qualifier spot getting a captain's nod. And as Shane Ryan detailed in kind of a word-by-word analysis for Golf Digest, it doesn't seem like Davis Love III is inclined to pick Bubba with that last pick that'll be next Sunday after the Tour Championship ends during halftime of NBC's Sunday Night Football game, because NBC broadcasts the Ryder Cup, so of course there's always some kind of marketing synergy BS that's involved, and so that's why we have to wait a few extra hours for that. and why it's done. You can be cynical about that. Now, if you are cynical, your first inclination might be, well, Bubba's the pick. Bubba's the guy. He's going to get picked. And out of the four guys that will be picked, he is obviously the one with the biggest profile. He has two Masters titles. He has almost 10 PGA Tour wins. People know who he is. He's flashy. They may not like him in some cases, but if you do, you're a huge Bubba fan. Why not reveal that pick to the nation at halftime of a Sunday night football game, which is the nation's most watched television program? Makes sense to me. And if that's the case, then we've all been played for fools. Like, oh, Bubba's not going to make the team. He didn't get picked now. And Davis basically said he wasn't going to get a pick, and then now he gets a pick. And that would probably leave a sour taste in a lot of people's mouths about the idea of having this task force and the idea of, after 2014, trying to rally around this new way of doing things, and then it turns out the new way of doing things in 2016 just so happens to be picking guys who were literally 1 through 12 in the point standings, and there's no variability whatsoever. So if that's the case, I think that will be the brushback from people is, hey, what was the point of this process? What's the point of adding a second tier to the pick structure, to having three at one point and then one after the FedEx Cup, if it was really just going to be those four guys all along? I think people can ask that already, given that Phil Mickelson said for the BMW Championship that the picks have already been made. The Tiger has had a large influence on that. Which, by the way, Tiger said, or Davis Love said, Tiger had submitted his picks weeks ago. Weeks ago. So if the picks were already made, if they kind of already knew their contingency plan for if Bubba made the team, here's who we would pick. If Bubba doesn't make the team, here's who we would pick. If so-and-so makes the team, here's who we would pick. I think that, and that's when Patrick Reed was on the outside looking in. That's when Brooks Koepka was on the outside looking in. That's when Jimmy Walker was on the outside looking in. And obviously Jimmy Walker changed things by winning the PGA Championship, but he could have easily gotten a pick because he partners well with Ricky Fowler. Brooks Koepka could have gotten a pick because he was pretty close, but his effort at the PGA Championship got him in based on points. So if the plans all along didn't have Bubba Watson in them, then all of Davis's words in the Monday news conference kind of make sense. He basically says, hey, the Tour Championship isn't a four-round tryout to make the Ryder Cup team, that we're still looking at players that are in the Tour Championship and players that are not in the Tour Championship. So think about Jim Furyk, among others. And if you're looking at a slew of players that aren't in a tournament, and some that are, then that tournament really can't matter that much, hypothetically speaking. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. I still think that kind of the fallback pick is Bubba. That if you don't get someone that goes out there, Justin Thomas, Daniel Berger, Kevin Chappell, some other guys, Americans who are somewhat relatively close to the top 20 in the standings after the points qualifying period ended, if one of those guys wins the Tour Championship and or the FedEx Cup, then I think you look at those guys and go, okay, well, we probably should put them on the team, maybe. Or if Davis is being absolutely forthright and saying, hey, we've got a number of guys in contention and some of them aren't in this field, then you have to go, okay, well, then this doesn't really mean anything. This is the Tour Championship and the FedEx Cup finish. And that over there is the Ryder Cup, and there's no Venn diagram crossing over that determines the captain's pick. I would be, if I were the PGA of America, I would expect brushback from that, then, you know, blowback from fans who go, well, why do we drag this out all of this time to have extra time to make the picks, to have an additional pick on top of the three initial picks? It looks like we're holding out as long as possible to find the savior, when the Europeans did it basically the day the U.S. qualifying ended. They went ahead and named their captain's picks. They're like, yep, we're ready to go. Let's go do this thing. See you later. We're going to get some wine and some cigars. We'll see you out there. And it makes the U.S. kind of look weak, in a sense. And I don't mean that. I don't think that they are weak. What I mean is that when Europe's like, yeah, we've won 8 of 10, we get three captain's picks, here's who I pick. I'm going to pick my best friend, Lee Westwood. I'm going to pick a guy who won playing alongside of me, and Thomas Peters. I'm going to pick the guy who made the winning putt for the Ryder Cup in 2012. So those are my guys, and that's it. And we'll see you out there. I got six rookies. We're going to roll with it. I mean, that's confidence. That's Darren Clarke did not seem in any way all that broken up about the guys that make up his team, because he feels like he's going to win with them, and he's not all that concerned that he's got six rookies. Although Martin Kaymer did say, interestingly enough, ahead of the Italian Open this week, that he quoted a statistic saying that rookie teams, unproven commodities, in particular the foursomes format of the Ryder Cup, win 7% of their matches, he said. I have not verified the veracity of that statistic, but if that's the case, then you've got eight guys you've got to send out in two sessions of foursomes. You only have six guys that have done this before, so conceivably, you have to send out, I know you have to send out at least two rookies to fill the team. So do you put them as a team and then, under Martin Kaymer's statistic, slaughter them for 2 points and hope they maybe save a point or a half point out of it? Or do you create two teams of veterans and two teams pairing a rookie and an experienced player, which is kind of what they did in 2014 to a lot of success? I think that's what you will see. You will not see a rookie team for foursomes. You may see that in four ball, where you can basically just play golf normally and see how it works out. But I thought that was an interesting thing that Martin Kaymer brought up. So to get back to the American team, there's no worry about a lack of experience here. Everybody on the team, except for Brooks Koepka, has at least one Ryder Cup under their belt, if not more. And for J.B. Holmes, who's playing in a second, he has the experience of winning on American soil, which not a lot of guys have. So that's good news for him coming into it, even though he hasn't done this in 8 years. Now being a part of it again, he can draw on those feelings of having the home crowd experience, playing well. And he's got some compliments, apparently, because that's why Davis picked the guys he did, or so he said, that looking at the data, he found these guys could fill particular roles. When you think about Matt Kuchar, he could team up with a variety of different players, but you probably think about Zach Johnson or Brant Snedeker for that group, and maybe that's a pod of three. Ricky Fowler is obviously a guy who has never won a Ryder Cup match. He's 0-3-5, but he's a bulldog in match play. He grinds out matches, and half points are a big deal. So you put him with Jimmy Walker, you see if they can rekindle what they did pretty well in 2014, you got that. You've got Jordan Spieth and Patrick Reed. There's no doubt they're going to play together for the first couple of days, and then you might send them out there all four sessions, depending on how they are in terms of their success. You've got Phil Mickelson. I would think you could put him with either Dustin Johnson or Brooks Koepka, and you can kind of play them as a triad a little bit. You could have Koepka be a part of a team with Mickelson, or you could do Koepka and Dustin Johnson in four ball. I think that would be so much fun to watch. I think it would be. So you've got a lot of guys that can kind of pair together, but when you look at Bubba Watson, who is his natural pair that's on the team? Zach? Rookie? The only guy that's ever really worked well with Bubba Watson is Jeff Overton, and he's not making any other Ryder Cup teams ever again. So I think that it's very important to underscore what Davis's point is here. I think he is thinking that every player needs a match, needs a compliment. And if he doesn't find one with Bubba Watson, he's not going to pick him. He's going to pick instead in favor of perhaps a younger player, someone that can be brought along through this experience. Maybe they can contribute. Maybe they don't contribute a ton, but that they're worth something. I mean, every captain's pick is, on average, worth about 1.75 points, 1.8 points. And that's regardless of side. It's basically the same. So if they're worth about 2 points, then okay, then it's going to come down to the guys that were the automatic qualifiers. The guys that are added to the team can be of use, but they're not necessarily going to be the guy to get you 5 points, the exclusion being Ian Poulter when he did it as a captain's pick. So he got four. But that's how you got to think about it, is if Davis doesn't think Bubba has a pair, then let's go find a young guy who hasn't done this before, who can contribute and bring in some fresh energy and maybe be a part of this process, this idea of building a program, this idea of building a franchise process. So I think that makes sense. We'll see next Sunday whether or not Bubba Watson is the fallback pick, whether he earned it. Who knows? But I think there is mixed analysis out there to say Bubba is the front runner for that position, that final spot on the team. And there are others like, I just don't see how it happens, given what Davis said and what he kind of laid out on Monday. So we will see, but that's where I see things right now. Turning briefly to Golfsmith. Golfsmith filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection in Delaware and U.S. bankruptcy court yesterday. They owe somewhere in the area of $100 million to $500 million in debt to match their $100 million to $500 million in assets. You only have to check general ranges in bankruptcy filings, which is really kind of bizarre when you're talking about $400 million spread. But the thought was that the debt structure that the Golfsmith has, they were acquired in 2012 by this Ontario Canada Municipal Employees Fund, and in part, and they carried at the time the Golfsmith about $200 million in debt. So the debt is ultimately what overwhelmed them. And then as they kind of started to slide a little bit in business, the companies that they work with, all these golf manufacturers and golf equipment makers and apparel makers, decided to give them less favorable trade terms in terms of paying off inventory and how much money they got back, all of these things, because they weren't getting as much money. They weren't moving the same kind of volume. And ultimately that screwed over Golfsmith, which was just kind of treading water to keep trying to pay off this debt, and they couldn't do it. This is not a golf sky is falling down story. It's just not. Obviously, sales are down in golf in general because there are fewer players. There are 6 million fewer players in the peak in 2005, although the Washington Post reported that was 2003, but they don't know shit about golf. So, 2005, there were about 30 million golfers. Now there are about 24 million. Many of them are older. That's just the nature of things. People who are in their 18 to 30 range are not really playing golf at the same clip. They might be going to Topgolf, but they're not necessarily playing golf. That's probably because their wages have stagnated relative to their class in the last 20 years. They don't make a lot of money. They don't have a lot of time. Things have changed in that regard. They're addicted to phone. I mean, I can give you 25 different reasons why there are fewer people playing golf, and it would sound intelligent and would actually probably have a basis in reality. I don't have all the research to tell you that with absolute certainty, but I think if you and I sat here for a while and spitballed about what the reasons are why people don't play golf that are under the age of 35, we could name all of them, and there would be a lot of them. So that's something to consider, but the reality is, and this is something I put to Gary Cohen in our interview we recorded this morning, and that is golf rounds are up. There are more rounds of golf being played this year than last, and last year than the year before that. So there are more rounds. There may not necessarily be more golfers. So in one sense, that's good. The people who are playing are really playing. In one sense, that's bad, because those are the people holding up the game. So we need to get more people in to replace those people, as unfortunately, they die off. So it's a really, we get mixed signals about what's happening in golf. You know, and ultimately to you, I don't know if you even give a crap about the health of golf as an industry. So I don't want to take too much time on this. But I am interested to see how people take up the game, how they come in, play, exit, how long they stay, how often they play, all of those types of things. And I see from people all the time on Twitter or Facebook or even in emails when they get in touch with me talking about history of the, or health of the game and what's happening anecdotally, what's happening where they are. And we can talk about that another day on another podcast. But I am interested to hear those things. So if you have stories about that, if you have things to say about that, please go ahead and email me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. Twitter, Ryan Ballingy is my name. On Twitter, so and in general. So go ahead and find me there, and please let me know. I'll be interested to hear your thoughts on that. And that leads into a segue about our guest, Gary Cohen. Gary is the CEO of Easy Links, and as I mentioned at the top of the show, you may not know who Easy Links is, but you have almost undoubtedly used their services. They are a technology company. They were founded 20 years ago, basically, and they help golf courses, golf course owners, golf course operators, do a bevy of services, point of sale, at the register, online. They create those booking engines that you find on golf course websites so you can book times. They offer customer relationship data, so when you book, how often you book, at what price you pay, the weather when you book, all that kind of stuff, that kind of customer intelligence. And they do it all pretty quietly, except for teeoff.com by PGA Tour, which the PGA Tour invested in the company slash venture in 2015. And they have put a big push into this to take on Golf Now, because Easy Links has a deeper tee sheet of courses than Golf Now does. So, and a much more robust one in that regard. So we talked to Gary about the health of the business, about his company a little bit, changes in golf. So if you are not a person who likes to talk about the health of golf or where golf is going or how technology can help you, this may not be your favorite interview ever, but for the golf geek in me, I thought this was timely considering what happened with Golfsmith. And I found out some things about Easy Links, having worked with them in the past, that I didn't know that I thought were interesting. So we'll turn it over to that interview, and we'll come back at the end. Thanks again to Gary Combe for being a part of the show. Again, really enjoyed the conversation with Gary. I thought it was a fun one. Hopefully you enjoyed it as well, got some insights out of it. Please let me know what your thoughts on that are. RyanAtTheGolfNewsNet.com or on Twitter at Ryan Ballingy. Next week on the show, we will have some semblance of what the Tour Championship is starting to unfold as when we record on Thursday. We'll get maybe a little bit of an idea, depending on when we record on the day, where we might be with captain's picks. And we'll go into some other stuff when the web.com Tour Finals. They'll have two events in the book, so we'll have a better idea of what the 25 players who earn PGA Tour cards through that process will look like as well. If you listen to us through iTunes, please give us a 5-star review. We appreciate that. It helps us promote our show and get out to more people and get more people's feeds on iTunes. So that would be greatly appreciated if you're willing to do that. If you leave a comment or a question, especially a question, we'll answer it on air. We're happy to do that too. Even if you just email us or tweet us, we'll answer any and all questions that you have for us on Twitter or Facebook or whatever way you choose to communicate with people, digitally speaking. Also, please check out the Golf News Net app. It's available for Apple and Android devices. It's nice and easy to use. There are no ads right now. We'll eventually add some, but not a lot. And it allows you to get to all of our content, all of our videos, podcasts, GNN Radio, all of it is available on the app. We appreciate it if you are a big enough fan of our show and GNN to download it.
Gary, thanks for joining us on the show today. You've been with the company since 2012 at Easy Links, and you guys are experiencing a pretty significant amount of growth, not only within the company, but also within your relationship with PGA Tour. So let's get the 30,000-foot version of that growth and what that growth story looks like.
Well, sure. Thanks for having me here, Ryan. Let me tell you a little bit about Easy Links. I've been here for about 4 years, and we've really been experiencing some tremendous growth, especially over the last 2 years. Little background on Easy Links. We're a 20-year-old startup in the golf industry, and we really have been around for 20 years, but given the way we run the business and the innovation that we are providing, and frankly, even the growth of the company, it feels a whole lot like a startup. From a 30,000-foot view, the company really does two things. One is we provide industry-leading software to golf courses to enable them to run their business effectively. And then on the other side, we also run an e-commerce site where golfers can go to purchase tee times and tee times that they can't find anywhere else. And that one is called teeoff.com by PGA Tour.
So you guys have come together with a couple of different major public-facing initiatives. Obviously, the teeoff by PGAtour.com is probably the one people think about the most. What has that impact been on Easy Links as a business and people's public awareness that you guys even exist? Because in my previous life, I've worked for Billy Casper Golf. I mean, anybody who works in golf club management knows who Easy Links is. But golfers may not necessarily, because the technology that you guys provide and you guys offer to golf courses isn't necessarily stamped with Easy Links all over it.
You know, I think you're exactly right. So about a year ago, we came together with the Tour, and the Tour made an investment in our company. And through that partnership, they have provided us with some great assets and access to different types of media, like television commercials and placements on PGAtour.com, which is the most visited site on the internet for golf. And we get these assets, really, frankly, that no one else can get. With the tour, we now have access to the largest audience of golf fans anywhere. So as you can imagine, our awareness has really increased quite a bit in the last year. In about 4 or 5 months ago, the tour really liked where we're going and the partnership, and so they doubled down and made an additional investment, which allowed us to, in turn, purchase a company called IBS, who's been in the golf business for about 25 years. And in addition to that, it's also given us the resources to invest in our technology and our marketing to really drive innovation, which I think is really critical for the golf industry.
As EasyLinks is kind of growing, can you attribute that in part to the golf industry finally, in some senses, catching up to where technology is going? Because for so long, there have been so many courses that have kind of put their hands and said, hey, I don't know if I'm ready for online tee times. I don't know if I'm ready for a point-of-sale piece of software that operates in the cloud. I've always done things this way. We've got our customers. We're very happy the way that we are. Has there been a kind of turning in attitude among course operators, course owners?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of a number of things. We are growing both with the number of courses that are using our software, and I think that's a testament to the level of technical skills that we have, and the fact that our software really is industry leading. I think it's also a testament to the fact that we have a higher profile because of the tour and because of the audience that now we are exposed to. And then lastly, I think your point is also correct, that we're starting to see a change in how golfers want to interact with golf courses. And it's just like everything else you've seen in the technology space over the last 15 years, that users want to be able to interact with the service provider whenever, wherever, however they want. And that's what we're doing. And we're doing that with teeoff.com by PGA Tour. Anytime you want to book a tee time, you can. It's very easy. We have deal times that aren't available anyplace else. We have course times and courses that just don't exist anywhere else. We also, not only can you book online or mobile, but we also run the industry's largest reservation center 24/7. We have 150 agents that are taking tee times for golf courses all the time, all over the world. And it's a great way to ensure that as a golf course, you don't miss an opportunity to sell a tee time. And we also, one other point on that, is that it's also a great way to ensure that you as a golf course are collecting the data that's so important for marketing to golfers, to make sure that they know, that the golfers know what your offering is. And when we take a reservation at the reservation center, we have a very high rate. More than 90% of the time, we're capturing the data that the golf course wants, including the name, the address, email address, phone number. And by doing that, it gives we provide all of that information. That is all the course's data. And by doing that, it gives a golf course a huge advantage in being able to get their message out and attract golfers to their course.
Is that piece of it, that CRM piece, the customer relationship management, for people who are listening or haven't heard that acronym before, is that piece of it something that golf went missing for a really long time, where they just felt like, hey, we've got these people, they come and play, we see a lot of the same people over and over again. What is the point in capturing their information? Versus now, there's obviously competition for other activities within golf, within pricing. you kind of need to be able to use this information to your advantage to keep these customers and keep them happy.
Yeah, you know, I've been in a number of different industries and technology space over the last 20, 25 years, and when I came into this into the golf space, I was frankly a little surprised at how few courses were really effectively using database management and, as you're saying, as CRM, customer relationship management, and it's really critical to do. That is what golfers, that is what consumers, and in this case golfers, expect. They want communication that is tailored to them. And, you know, there's just a ton of statistics that show that's a much more effective way of communicating with people. So what we do is we provide golfers, golf courses with significant amount of reporting, database management. We provide the tools that the golf course needs in order to effectively talk to their customers. And we call that is massive or mass one-on-one communication. Right, because you want to be able to do this on a large scale, but you want every golfer who receives that communication to understand that you know who he or she is.
And so, if golf is kind of behind, is it kind of been shooting itself in the foot a little bit in terms of participation? Because from a beginner's standpoint, we see data from the NGF, the National Golf Federation, and other kind of surveys, maybe private consulting groups that say millions of people take up golf every year in some fashion or another. They go to a driving range, a top golf, they go with their friends to a par three course, whatever the experience is. And so few of them take up the game, and so few of them after that come back. Is part of that because we just haven't invested enough in capturing data to then foster that relationship from the second they pick up a club to getting them to become some kind of golf diehard like so many of us are?
I think there are lots of reasons for that. I think that I actually have, in the last 2 years, I've seen the golf industry embracing more of that and actually starting to do a better job with CRM. It takes a while, right? The statistics, though, are a little challenging to read, right? Because I think you're correct that there are a lot of new people who come in and then often they don't stick with it. It's a challenging game. It takes a lot of time. There's a lot of other competition for their time and their money. On the other hand, rounds are up as well. Yeah. And I think the other key element is that I think of this as somewhat glacial. This is a very large industry. Just the number of people who are doing it is big. So if the number of people who are coming in and the number of golfers are flat, slightly down according to the NGF, but the rounds are up, what that's saying is that those who are golfing more often. And it really goes to the passion of this. And I think that what the tools that we provide enable the course to do is to be able to stoke the passion of the golfer so that you can encourage them to come and golf more often and give them a reason to, and whether it's for the exercise, for the camaraderie, or for just the personal challenges. That's what some of these tools can help you ascertain, and then you can go ahead and get that kind of a message out.
Now, having teeoff.com and now the partnership with the PGA Tour is part of that, and then you guys obviously do so many different things for booking engines and other course-specific applications. How does that kind of fit with the different buckets of golfers that you have? Maybe you have the club golfer who pretty much stays at their club. You have a loyal course golfer, maybe stays at one or two courses. And then maybe you have a nomad for whatever reason. They like to play different places or they just follow the best price. How have your properties given you insight into what kinds of golfers there are out there and how they traverse between courses and prices?
Well, I think the key point is that you have to make sure, as the provider, we have to make sure that we are giving the courses the tools, and the courses have to make sure that they are following what their consumers want. So it seems to us from the research that we've done that what the golfers want mostly is this choice. They want to know where they can play, when they can play, even a little bit of with whom they can play, and at what price they can play. And by being able to put that out onto multiple channels, right, whether it's the course's website, and we give booking engines, we provide that, whether it's on mobile, whether it's on a site like teeoff.com by PGA Tour, or even other packagers so that you can do this as a whole vacation. You have to, as a course, be able to intercept that kind of demand, and you have to make sure that you're providing the choice. That is what we hear over and over again. We survey golfers fairly regularly. They want an abundance of options, and then they want to be able to make their choice. They're used to that. They're used to that with restaurants. They're used to that with airlines. They're used to that with hotels. And golf is exactly the same type of choice.
You mentioned something very interesting to me in your response to the last question, and that is that in some cases people are looking for the ability to book with specific people, with specific partners. They may not have a regular group, or maybe they have one person, but they need two more, or what have you. Is there a move from you guys to potentially offer more people book not only times and places they want, but include the people that they want in a more social way using your online mechanisms?
Yeah, we're looking at a number of those. There are a number of entities that are trying some of this. I think we're in some early stages of that. Mm-hmm. And I think that is something that you'll probably see coming out in a more aggressive way over the next 6 months. I think the social element is crucial. That's not only from the golfer perspective, but also from the course perspective. Courses need to manage their social presence, and they have to be able to have an open forum. This is the expectation these days. So they need to make sure that they give golfers who are searching and have a lot of choices, searching their course, they want to see reviews. They want to see reviews from other golfers. And they also, what we have found, is that courses that have an open forum, where even if there is a negative comment, if they address it and they address it directly and fairly, it's actually not seen as a big negative. You don't want to have too many of those, but if you have it every once in a while, and you address it effectively, you can manage your social reputation. And that's becoming more and more important, especially with a new generation of golfers coming in.
I hadn't intended to ask you this question, Gary, until I saw the news yesterday from Golfsmith that they filed for Chapter 11. And I'm not going to ask you about Golfsmith in particular. But from an outside perspective, there are a lot of folks who, for lack of a better judgment, want to pile on golf and want to report that golf is dying or golf is in a terrible spot or golf is in some kind of negative way. But the data also suggests, including stuff that we're talking about here, that rounds are up, people are trying the game, Topgolf is a success, PGA Junior League is doing very well, but there are also a number of positive indicators for the sport. So from your perspective, what are the kind of high points that golf can say to a broader world that, yes, there are issues within our sport, but that we're moving forward in a positive fashion as well?
Well, you know, Ryan, I think you're right. There are a lot of countervailing data points here. You know, and I certainly want to profess to have any sort of expertise on the equipment retail side, and you know why Golfsmith went bankrupt is beyond my knowledge base. But, you know, if you look at some of the other pieces, the rounds, as you said, are up. We're booking way more rounds on TF.com than we have ever booked for our courses. Viewership is up, and it's very strong. You know, there's the whole cadre of new golfers that have really taken hold. The Olympics, I think, were actually way better than was expected. And so, you know, you have all of these great young players that are out there, then the tour, as, and now I won't speak for the tour, but just in talking to people at the tour, they're really happy with where the touring side of golf is. And that does, as we saw, you know, 10, 15 years ago, that does have a bit of a lag effect, a positive lag effect on the playing side. And that might be part of the reasons why rounds are up, even if the number of golfers are flat.
And ultimately, and obviously I don't want to get you into a situation where you can potentially malign people who are helping your business. But as best we can tell, golf dramatically expanded under kind of some false pretenses about the number of people who would play and got colluded into a little bit of the real estate boom and bust of the late 90s, 2000s. Is that something that we haven't really done a good job of as an industry of explaining to people? This is kind of what happened to our business, and this is our correction, and then once that's done, here's where we're going to be.
You know, from my perspective, I'm seeing that the smart course operators are just doing that. They're living in the here and now. They're trying to offer up a solid product at a good price. They're trying to be more intelligent about how they price. There's a lot of work being done with dynamic pricing. The majority of our courses are using dynamic pricing. And they realize that, you know, when you push everything else aside, this becomes a passion play. And if you can figure out how to capture that passion, a lot of that other noise around golf just doesn't come into play. You know, so people who love golf, they love golf. And so they don't care about the real estate boom while they're playing. And that, I think that's what that's where a lot of the operators are operating these days.
One last question, and that is a look forward for you guys as a company. What is your vision for Easy Links? In the short term, maybe next 6 to 12 months.
Hello.
And where do you guys see yourself going in the way of advancement in the next 2 to 3 or 4 years in terms of technology and how it can help golfers and golf courses?
Hey, Ryan, you cut out for the first part of that question. Could you repeat that question for me? I'm sorry.
Yeah, absolutely. So looking forward for you as the head of Easy Links, what is kind of your vision for the company for the next 6 to 12 months? And then maybe 2, 3, 4 years out, how are you anticipating Easy Links being able to help course operators and owners and golfers enjoy the game more?
Well, for Easy Links, what I'm seeing over the next couple of years is more growth. Right? We, like I was saying before, we just purchased IBS about 4 months ago, in conjunction with an additional investment from the PGA Tour. They really are doubling down as part of this. And what that allows us to do is to continue to innovate. We are hiring a number of people, engineers, technicians, QA people, marketing folks, and with the goal of being able to make sure that our software is by far the best in the industry. You know, traditionally, Easy Links has always had a very strong T-sheet. We were the first ones to have a cloud-based T-sheet. We were really the first electronic T-sheet some 20 years ago, and it's been at the forefront of the industry for a long time. IBS is more well-known for its strong point of sale. And when you put those two industry-leading products together and you integrate them tightly, you get the best-in-breed solution. What we're trying to do is make sure that we are pushing that further and further so that the courses have the tools to be able to operate effectively and move into the next phase, which is going to be more electronic. We will continue to work very closely with the Tour. They're great partners. You'll see us in more commercials, more spots, integrating deeper with PGAtour.com, making sure that we are at the forefront of the technology for the courses, as well as a great place for golfers to find tee times, and frankly, times that they can't find anywhere else. Our ultimate goal, our vision, is to be golf's most valued partner. And when I say that, I mean we want to be the partner that golf courses look to help them grow, and the partner that golfers look to find the tee times that they want in order to grow. And also, we partner with a ton of people in the industry. We have a very open system, and we're happy to integrate. So when you look at that, to become golf's most valued partner means you got to be very open, and you got to stay at the forefront of technology. And that's how I see us growing over the next 2 to 3 years.
Gary, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us. It was a really great discussion about what's happening in the game, what's happening with you guys at Easy Links and your growth story. Congratulations on what you've been able to achieve, and we're looking forward to seeing more.
Thanks, Ryan. I enjoyed the discussion.
That's it for us this week. Very much appreciate the company of your time, and we'll talk to you this time next week on the 19th Hole Golf Show. Bye, everybody.